The legal revival of Arizona's 19th century near total ban on abortion once again put the national spotlight on Arizona and its politics. And the recent indictment of fake electors after the 2020 presidential election kept the state on the front burner. And now the fitful repeal of the 1864 abortion ban suggests that the political heat in Arizona is still rising.
Repealing this ban is an important step in the right direction. So whether or not that goes into effect before November is irrelevant, because they were going to go back to that ban and back to that ban and back to that ban again. We need to repeal it.
I don't see any other action in the legislature. I think the focus should be 100% on defeating the proposed amendment, which would be unrestricted, unregulated abortion in Arizona. It's not where the voters are. It's not where Arizonans are. So let's focus on defeating Planned Parenthood's unrestricted, unregulated amendment.
The Arizona AG's office just revealed the names of some other defendants indicted this week for that so-called fake electors scheme. They are all members of former President Trump's inner circle: John Eastman, Boris Epstein, Christina Bob, Jenna Ellis, and Michael Roman. A total of 18 people were indicted on Wednesday, and there are still.
Even before all these things, Arizona figured to be one of the few competitive states on the presidential map, and it has a key U.S. Senate race, two competitive House races, and the entire legislature is up for grabs. Welcome to The Gaggle, a politics podcast by the Arizona Republic and azcentral.com. Each week, we put this state's political news under the magnifying glass with experts, analysts, and elected officials.
I'm Mary Jo Pitzel. I cover politics and policy for the Arizona Republic.
And I'm Ron Hansen. I cover national politics for the Republic.
Today, we're going to analyze the state of play in Arizona after weeks of big news. Joining us from Tucson to make sense of all this is Samara Klar, a political science professor at the University of Arizona. She's the author of the 2016 book, Independent Politics, and the founder of the website Women Also Know Stuff. To me, she's just someone really insightful about understanding the nation's newest swing state. Dr. Klar, welcome to The Gaggle.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
So let's just jump right in. The New York Times recently described Arizona as a political hothouse. I'm not really sure what that is, but we seem poised again to have some close, really important races. What has shifted in this state from making it reliably red to predictably purple in recent years?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not sure what a political hothouse is. That's not a political science term we use, but I understand the sentiment and I agree completely. You know, Arizona's been on a trend over the last decade or so where Republicans who did once reliably win Arizona elections have been winning by smaller and smaller margins. So if you look at sort of the trends in presidential outcomes in Arizona, you'll see candidates on in the Republican Party will win, but not overwhelmingly. I mean, Arizona's never really been like a deep red state where it's like a blowout election. It's always kind of been within reach for the Democrats, but it's only within the last, you know, 5 or 6 years where we're starting to see Democrats reliably win. And now I think Arizona is a bona fide swing state. I mean, our electoral outcomes are very, very narrow. And, you know, the best pollsters in the country can't tell you with certainty who's going to win any given election in Arizona. You know, we see the Arizona Attorney General's race was won by, 300 votes. The presidential outcomes are won by very small margins. So I think that's what makes us such an unpredictable and exciting place to be watching politics.
So I want to break this into two pieces for you. Talk about first the role of Republicans crossing the line, and secondly, the role of demographics.
Right. So, you know, there's an open question at this point as to how much demographics have shifted electoral politics in Arizona and how much it's actually been a function of the candidates we're running. And I think both of these factors are really important here. So let's start with demographics. You know, the demographics of Arizona are not dramatically different from what they used to be when you're looking at registration data. So if we want to see with which parties are voters registering, Republicans have always had the numerical advantage, and they still do to this day. So about 37-38% of Arizona voters are registered Republicans. About 32% or so are registered Democrats. But we have this very large chunk, about 36-37% of Arizona voters who are independents, who are registered independents. So that's a really interesting split. It's almost a three-way split, really, between Republicans, Democrats, and independents. Now, the independents, they're not voting for independent candidates. I mean, Kyrsten Sinema wishes they would, but that's not really what they are. They're largely split between people who think of themselves as liberal and think of themselves who are conservative. So the demographics, when it comes to politics, are fairly evenly split. And it's shifted a little in recent years. Republicans have lost their advantage somewhat. But, you know, one thing that I find really fascinating about Arizona is the registration numbers would suggest that Republican candidates should keep winning, and they're not. So despite the fact that we have more Republican voters than Democratic voters, Republican candidates are suffering a little bit. So I think that brings in the second factor, which is the candidates themselves. What we're seeing in Arizona in recent years are Democratic candidates who are very committed to portraying themselves as moderate and centrist. Think a real sort of prototypical example would be Mark Kelly, who really doesn't really talk about Joe Biden. He doesn't really talk about being a Democrat. He really talks about being a centrist, being a moderate. He doesn't like to identify with other Democrats. And Arizonans love that, and they always have. Arizona is a very independent-minded state. And when we think of sort of the famous politicians from Arizona, John McCain and Barry Goldwater, these are always kind of these postpartisan, nonpartisan, sort of fuzzy partisan characters. And that's really the vibe in Arizona. And I think in recent years, Democrats have been a little more successful at using that playbook, whereas Republican candidates recently have instead tried to sort of tack themselves more to the party line. Candidates like Carrie Lake, Blake Masters, who frankly haven't been winning elections. I think it's largely because they're probably a little more extreme than what most Arizona Republicans have wanted to see.
Well, given those trends that you're talking about, when you look ahead to this year's elections, do you have a sense of the voting blocks to watch as we approach the primary and the general? I mean, for example, are Republicans crossing the line a voting block?
You know, it's hard to know. And again, it's largely because of this huge percentage of Arizonans who are independents. If you're publicly identifying as a Republican or as a Democrat, it's pretty unlikely that you're going to vote for the other party. I think the bigger concern for Republicans is that they just won't vote at all. That they'll say, you know what, I don't love these candidates, but I'm not going to vote for a Democrat, so this is just not my election to vote. And what both parties need to do here is really try to mobilize the people whose ideological preferences align with the party. When you ask about which blocks are important to mobilize, in a state like Arizona, where the electoral outcomes are so razor thin, every single block is important. I mean, every vote counts. It's a cliche to say every vote counts. And the truth is, if you live in a lot of states, like, does it? Not really. Arizona, you got to vote because it is so close. It's really down to the wire on a lot of these elections. And that's why I think we are seeing, if you live in, I mean, I live in Tucson and we get a lot of it in Tucson. I can't even imagine what you guys in Maricopa County experience, but the door knocking and the text messages and the phone calls and the flyers and the signs and the yard signs and whatever, it's really so much more intense than anything we used to experience because both parties know they need every single vote.
I'm wondering, given that we've been embroiled in the whole abortion issue for the last month or so, well, actually, the last 2 years, are women going to be an important voting block this year? And how does that affect like other ethnically defined groups such as Hispanics?
Sure. So let's take that sort of one at a time. We'll start with women and then we'll move to Hispanic voters because both obviously are very important parts of the Arizona electorate. Abortion is an incredibly salient issue across the country, but also in Arizona because there's been so much drama in this state about, you know, what is the law? Is there a ban? The Supreme Court put the ban back. The legislature has now repealed the ban. I did some polling just about a month ago of a large sample of registered voters in Arizona. Only 7% of Arizona voters, supported a ban without exceptions, which is the ban that the, you know, pre-territorial ban. So nobody liked the ban. And that's why we immediately saw every politician, every candidate, Democrats and Republicans alike, distance themselves from the ban and ultimately repeal it. Now, when it comes to more popular abortion policies, there's a lot of nuance, of course. It's a very nuanced issue. There's not just two sides to this issue. But my polling showed about 40 to 41% of Arizona voters believe abortion should always be left to a woman and her doctor, period. It is not something they want to see legislated. They think it should just strictly be a personal medical choice. Now, about 25% of voters, so substantially less, but still 25%, do support a ban with exceptions. And then the remaining 20% or so of voters support abortion rights at various points in a pregnancy. So we see a lot of nuance in what Arizona voters believe, but largely strong opposition to any kind of ban, with 75% of voters opposing a ban altogether. Now, that is going to be a tricky issue for the Republicans to navigate because it looks as though abortion will be on the ballot in November. There is a move to have it as a ballot measure. And what I find in my polling is that voters who are pro-choice, you could say, or who support abortion rights, place much more importance on this issue than voters who are not pro-choice, who are pro-life, who oppose abortion. So it's a more mobilizing issue for people who are more traditionally liberal on the issue. And that's a big benefit to Democratic candidates. So that's something the Democrats are going to want to keep on the agenda. They want to keep that on people's minds. They want to keep it in the press. They want people to keep talking about it. Because what they're hoping, and this is what happens often with ballot measures, is people will come out to vote to support an issue. And while they're voting for that issue, they'll say, okay, fine, I'll vote for some candidates too. And if you're pro-choice and you're coming out to vote for abortion rights, probably the Democrats are more aligned with your views. So the Democrats are going to gain a few votes there. So I think it's going to be a really big issue in November, and it probably will benefit Democratic candidates. But I would say, one thing about abortion is it's not as gendered as people tend to think. I think there's sort of a idea that women are pro-choice, men less so. It's much more of a partisan issue than it is a gendered issue. Democratic men and Democratic women look pretty similar on the issue of abortion, and Republican men and Republican women actually also look quite similar on the issue of abortion. So we have Republican women tend to be pretty pro-life, and Democratic men pretty pro-choice. So it really brings out partisans more than it necessarily would bring out women specifically.
And could you address Hispanic voters, especially in recent years? We've seen a drift of especially Hispanic males towards the GOP column. Is that a block that's going to be in play this year?
Sure. So it's, of course, pretty difficult to think of Hispanic voters as a cohesive block because they are really a very diverse group of people in many ways, but politically as well. So, Arizona tends to have more Democratic leaning Hispanic voters than a state like Florida, for example, where, in Florida, many of the Hispanic voters originate from Cuba, which is traditionally more aligned with the Republican Party. Here in Arizona, the majority of the Hispanic population is from Mexico or Central America. People with Central American origins tend to be a little more Democrat, but nevertheless, we see quite a bit of political diversity. So typically about 60-ish, 65% of Hispanics will vote for the Democratic Party. About a third will vote for the Republicans. So it's a pretty substantial group. And I think in recent years, the Republican Party, both parties really, have become sort of awakened to the idea that this is a politically diverse group. They should not be simply taken for granted by the Democrats. And we're seeing much more sort of proactive mobilization within the Hispanic community. Historically, I think the Republicans in Arizona have not given the Hispanic community as much attention when it comes to voter mobilization, potentially because they didn't understand just the benefit that there are a substantial number of Hispanic voters with conservative viewpoints, with conservative ideology, who do feel more at home with the Republican Party. Now, having said that, the majority of Hispanic voters in Arizona are voting for the Democrats and do align more with Democrats. And as the Hispanic community grows or becomes a growing proportion of the Arizona electorate, that should benefit Democrats, but not necessarily, especially as Republicans now become more proactive about actually engaging with them.
We've seen some polling around former President Donald Trump and how he has done with that demographic. Is that something, given the more partisan leanings, I gather from your polling recently, the attitudes of people, does that mean that President Trump's standing with Hispanic voters necessarily translates into strength for Carrie Lake in the U.S. Senate race against Ruben Gallego? Does he sort of put a formidable check on any gains she might hope to have just because he is part of that demographic?
Well, the polling that I've done recently has shown that Trump is polling better in Arizona than Carrie Lake is. And that could be for a number of reasons. Potentially, I think one reason is Ruben Gallego is seen as more favorably here in Arizona than Joe Biden is. But the biggest issue that we tend to see among Hispanics, or I should say the issue that is most important to Hispanic voters, is frankly the economy. And people talk about border security and crime and abortion. Of course, all of these things are important. But what tends to dictate the issues with which people are primarily concerned is socioeconomic status. And for the Hispanic community in Arizona, the biggest issues have been inflation. You know, things are more controlled now than they were. But in 2022, Arizona had one of the highest inflation rates in the country. And that is still something that people are bouncing back from. Savings have gone down. People are concerned about, you know, about the cost of groceries, the cost of eggs, so on and so forth. So, you know, I think when you have an incumbent president and people aren't necessarily feeling the economic benefits that president has potentially produced, that's going to be a big advantage to the challenger. And I think that is really where Donald Trump right now is getting most of his support. The fact that people are just simply unhappy with maybe their own financial situations after the last 4 years.
And how does that relate to Carrie Lake? Are people able to distinguish between the races? Does partisanship control the day? How does that sort itself out?
Well, you know, partisanship is the most important factor when we're thinking about vote choice. But in Arizona, we do see split ticket voting, meaning that people will either vote for one party at the federal level, another at the state level, or they'll vote in one race and just not at all in another. And we actually did see in some of my analyses of exit polling in 2020, saw quite a bit of that, where people were voting for Mark Kelly and then not voting at all for a presidential candidate. They just didn't like either of them. So I wouldn't be surprised to see more of that this year. Gallego is polling quite well against Lake. I think that Lake has potentially lost a lot of support in Arizona. She's had a pretty, you know, drama-filled, scandal-filled time. She lost her election. There's been these drawn-out lawsuits that she loses. She's sort of associating herself with Trump, and now it seems like he's not necessarily reciprocating. So, you know, I think she's got a lot of baggage with voters that she's trying to figure out. And Gallego is a pretty strong contender that Arizona voters seem to put more support behind. Now, I'm not saying Gallego is it's not like a landslide right now in the polling, but he's doing considerably better in polls than I'm seeing Biden at this point. So, you know, I think people are distinguishing, to answer your question. Yes, I would not be surprised to see even more split ticket voting in Arizona than we saw in 2020.
You alluded to this earlier with Senator Kyrsten Sinema and independent voters, how they are not just voting for an independent because that happens to be their label. We have the possibility in the presidential race of an independent candidacy with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. There had been some flirtations by No Labels at one point. How much of an impact do you think independent voters in Arizona will have in terms of any kind of non-major party interests this year?
Sure. Well, you know, with so many independents, and independents are one of my favorite areas of expertise. I've spent a lot of my career studying independents and researching them. And I love independents. Everyone loves independents. Actually, that's one of the things I find in my research. People love independents. They love independent voters. Independent candidates are not quite as popular. So what we find with independent voters is really that they are not necessarily more ideologically moderate than partisans. Independent voters, more often than not, do have a pretty cohesive set of policy preferences. They're either liberal or conservative. And I should say when I say they're not more moderate than partisans, it's important to know that partisans are also pretty moderate. It's rare. I mean, even just think for yourself, do you agree with your preferred party on every single issue? Probably not. Most people don't. I mean, it's pretty unusual to go through a party platform and be like, yeah, that represents me 100%. Most people do feel a bit of a mix. They're a little more liberal on some things. They're a little more conservative on other things. They feel moderate on most things. And that's true for both Democrats and Republicans. And that's true for independents. So most independents do feel more comfortable voting for one of the two major parties. And in fact, 80 to 90% of independents, if you ask them, is there a party that you prefer? They'll say, yeah, I do. And it's sometimes the Democrats and sometimes the Republicans. And independents pretty consistently vote for that party. So people who identify as an independent typically are voting for the same party every election year. Now, they don't feel attached to that party. They're probably not putting up a yard sign. They're probably not phone banking. But every year when they evaluate the candidates, there's usually the same party that's putting out the candidate that best supports them. So the challenge for an independent candidate is to try to figure out how to create a party platform, I should just say a personal platform, there's really no party, that can bring in this really, really ideologically diverse group of people. Independents are kind of half liberal, half conservative. One candidate has to kind of cobble together some platform to bring them all in. That's incredibly difficult. It's why we don't typically see independent candidates succeed. Another big problem for independent candidates is that voters like to know that they're supporting someone who's probably going to win. People don't really like to just sort of throw away their vote as they think about it or spoil the election. So you really have to believe in a candidate. If you're going to vote for a candidate that you know is probably not going to win, there's got to be a real genuine support for that candidate. Now, Robert Kennedy, to his credit, has been trying to put out a pretty clear platform. I think another issue with independents is we don't really know what they think. I mean, if you give me any generic Republican or a generic Democrat, I could probably with reasonable degree of accuracy predict their views on most issues. With an independent, I have no idea. It requires a lot more research on the voters' part, more engagement. So, you know, he's doing his best. He's putting out a policy platform. And I think because Biden and Trump are really quite disliked, both of them, he's probably going to get a little more support than what we typically see among independents. But he certainly can't rely on independent voters to vote for him because these people are not really moderate. They prefer one of the parties.
Aside from the presidential race and the U.S. Senate race, which will be big headliners in the fall, there's a lot of attention to the Democrats who keep saying, this is the year that we're going to flip the legislature. I'm wondering, what is the likelihood of that happening from your point of view?
Well, you know, the legislature is just a little bit behind the trends when we look at sort of Arizona presidential elections. So as I said, you know, we look at presidential elections over time, Republicans were winning by smaller and smaller margins every year. It was sort of a linear trend. What we see in the Arizona legislature is that Republicans' advantage, their seat advantage, has been shrinking over time as well. So we are seeing that same pattern, just a little lagged. There are districts in Arizona that are very red, and there's districts that are very blue, and all sorts of things in between. One of the biggest demographic changes in Arizona is urbanization. It's one of the most rapidly urbanizing states in the country. That means rural areas are losing population very quickly, and urban areas, specifically Phoenix. I mean, I love Tucson, but the truth is I have to talk about Phoenix a lot in my research because Arizona politics is a lot. It's Maricopa County politics. When we say Arizona is turning purple, what we mean is Maricopa County is turning purple. Pima's blue. It's kind of always been blue. The red rural areas are red. They've kind of always been red. It's really Phoenix and the surrounding suburbs where we're seeing this big shift. And one of the biggest causes is that these red rural areas are getting smaller and smaller and smaller in their population size as more people move to the cities. Now, when you have young people moving into the cities, moving into Phoenix, they're developing their political views in a different setting. They're meeting new people. They're being exposed to new viewpoints. And we are seeing people shift toward a more Democratic-oriented voting patterns. That, I think, is going to eventually catch up to the legislature. I don't know if it will be this year. I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball and I could say, but the trends do support this theory that eventually the Arizona state legislature probably will flip. I mean, Republicans are losing seats every single year.
So that seems to suggest that if and when that happens, it might not be a one-off, but part of a historical trend. And is it urbanization that's really driving that possibility for like a more enduring change in the political makeup of the legislature?
Yeah. You know, I always try to explain to friends, especially people who maybe aren't that familiar with the United States, every state in the country is essentially the same politically. You have cities that are largely blue and you have rural areas that are largely red. The only thing that distinguishes a red state from a blue state is the proportion of people who live in cities relative to the proportion of people who live in rural areas. So if you did California and Texas, they're very similar. The cities are quite liberal. The rural areas are quite conservative. California just has far more people in cities relative to rural areas. And Texas has relatively more people in rural areas relative to the cities. It's a much bigger state with more rural population. And Arizona is similar. So the fact that we're seeing rural areas shrinking and cities gaining in population could, I think, have a pretty enduring effect on the political outcomes here in Arizona. One thing that could potentially sort of stop the bleed for the Republicans would be a shift in the types of candidates that are running. If the legislature becomes less ideologically extreme on the Republican side and they start running more moderate candidates, we do know that Arizonans like moderate candidates. It's something that tends to win here. I'm kind of waiting every election year to see when the Republicans are kind of going to switch their slate a little bit to maybe meet what the Republican voters seem to want. Doesn't look like it's happening this year, but potentially next year. Who knows?
So turnout figures to be pretty high in November. It's a presidential year. We've seen this before in this state. The question is, to what extent would a ballot measure on abortion rights or multiple measures for voters to consider affect the way that other races look in November? Does this change the composition of the electorate in any appreciable way? Is it mostly just around the edges just because of the already high turnout expected?
Sure. Well, I think there will be very high turnout in Arizona. There'll be a lot of mail-in ballots. There'll be a lot of people participating in this election, especially given that Arizona is getting so much attention. We're being reminded all the time we're so important. We really are. It's true. And every voter needs to vote. But a ballot measure is going to really put that over the top, especially something so salient like abortion. You know, a ballot measure is always helpful to turn out because you have these issue publics, people who care about this particular issue, who are going to work to get people to vote. Now, there's a lot of people out there who do not want to spend their time canvassing or door knocking for the Democrats or for the Republicans, but they will do it for these issues. So they are going to get people out to vote. It's going to increase the number of volunteers and people, you know, offering to drive people to the polls or whatever it might be, or help them with their, you know, make sure they know where they're going. It's going to be very, very important for turnout in Arizona. And as I mentioned, probably the polling suggests it will be more of an advantage to Democratic or liberal candidates than to Republican or conservative candidates, because the majority of Arizona voters oppose a ban. We don't know what abortion policy is going to look like in Arizona in the long term. It's been up and down so much. There's so much uncertainty. So I think it will be big for turnout. And in all likelihood, the spillover will probably have a positive impact on Democratic candidates.
Well, Arizona, as we have all seen, has seen a lot on the political sphere, going from the 2020 election to its prominent role in the ballot audit, which was seeking to overturn the election, the rejection of election deniers, many of them who lost in the 2022 races. So how do you explain Arizona politics to people from other states who are trying to figure out what is going on here? I know you've said that really the states are all sort of kind of alike, but where does Arizona distinguish itself from them?
So I think Arizona is just, I mean, I love Arizona. I love living here. I love studying it. And I love sort of the politics of Arizona because there is a lot of nuance here. Republicans and Democrats in Arizona tend to be a little bit more moderate than what we see nationally. So Arizona Democrats, on average, tend to be a little more conservative than what you'd find nationally. And Arizona Republicans on many issues actually tend to be a little bit more liberal. For example, on border issues, there's huge support among Arizona Republicans for a path for undocumented immigrants to become citizens. Immigration in Arizona is a very complicated issue because on one hand, Arizonans do feel personal and intense consequences of border insecurity. On the other hand, the economy of Arizona benefits from a certain amount of open flow between Mexico and the United States. It's a very diverse population. People know lots of friends and colleagues and neighbors who do not necessarily speak the same language as them or look like them. So Arizona is a really cool kind of special place. And I actually think, you know, my social circle is so much more politically diverse than a lot of colleagues and friends I have who live in other states. There's something much more integrated about Arizona relative to what we see in other places. And I think as a result, Arizona Republicans and Democrats are a little more moderate. And that is why they do really prefer more moderate candidates. We see moderate candidates winning. Now, the cities, of course, are more liberal. The rural areas are a little more conservative. The rural areas are shrinking rapidly. And in fact, the counties that we see voting for Republicans at higher rates than they have in the past are those that are shrinking in population the fastest. So the Republicans really need to kind of rethink the types of candidates they're going to be running in Arizona if they want to keep up with these rates of urbanization. The biggest story in Arizona politics, as I mentioned, is Phoenix and Maricopa County. The Phoenix suburbs, which are switching from red to blue, the size of Phoenix itself is growing so rapidly in the small towns around Phoenix. And I love to show my students every year the lists of the fastest growing towns in the United States. And it's always these little towns outside Phoenix. Half my students grew up in these towns. They know these towns. They're like, oh my God, yeah, they're five times bigger than they were when I was in high school. But that's kind of the situation in Arizona. Huge population growth that is resulting in big political shifts. And I think the candidates and the parties are going to have to figure out how to keep up.
Well, Dr. Klar, there's so much more we could go over. And who knows what bombshell is going to drop in the state this week.
Every day is different. That is for sure. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts with our listeners. And if people want to follow your work online or on social media, where's the best place to find you?
Well, I have a website with all my, you know, books and articles where I've been writing about this stuff, which is just samaraklar.com. And that would be the best way to find all the stuff that I'm up to.
And that's Klar, K-L-A-R?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. It's great to chat with you guys.
That is it for this week, Gaggle listeners. Do you have questions about today's episode or topics you'd like us to cover on the show? Send us a message at 602-444-0804 or send a voice memo to thegaggle@arizonarepublic.com. That's all one word, all spelled out.
This episode was edited and produced by Kaylee Monahan with help from Amanda Luberto. Episode oversight is by Kara Edgerson, and our news direction is from Kathy Tulamello. Our theme song and music comes from Universal Production Music. Additional sound bites of Democratic State Senator Eva Birch and Kathy Herod, the president of the Center for Arizona Policy, and reporter Morgan Lowe are all from AZ Family. Never miss an episode of The Gaggle by subscribing to us wherever you listen. If you learned something new today, be sure to share this episode with your friends. You can also leave us a review and please rate us 5 stars. You can follow The Gaggle on social media at AZC Podcasts. And you can find me at Mary J. Pitzel. That's P-I-T-Z-L.
And I'm at Ronald J. Hansen. That's H-A-N-S-E-N. The Gaggle is an Arizona Republic and AZCentral.com production. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.